Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
We are back and we are live. It is Fight IQ presented by RotoWire. Here to talk UFC Nashville, our main event is Stephen Wonderboy Thompson taking on Anthony Showtime Pettis. Here to talk all things DraftKings, I am your host of Fight IQ, the Daily Fantasy Sniper. Here with me, as always, is at least one half of our duo. It is Chris Olson of RotoWire. Chris, how are you doing today? I'll get into why there's only two of us in a second, but how are you?
Well, I'm doing all right. I was actually going to break the news, if you don't mind. Joe had some pretty earth-shattering news this week. Turns out Megan Anderson blocked him on Twitter. He's still getting over it. We wanted him to come, but, you know, grieving is a process, and so here we are. You know, we wish him the best.
That was well done by you. But don't worry, guys. I mean, Joe, we love Joe. We all know he's a great player, does a great job. But, I mean, I got to imagine at least half the people, or at least half the entertainment is us going at each other on this show. So you guys still have that to look forward to.
Of course.
It is an awkward card for DraftKings. You remember last week when I was picking all these underdogs and you thought I was crazy?
Oh, yeah.
I'm totally going back to and a lot came through, by the way, last week.
Yeah.
Some didn't, but I've done a total 180 where if you had asked me on Tuesday of this week, I was picking exactly zero underdogs. I'm up to half a one.
And probably half a one.
Probably one. And I think we all know which one I'm talking about. We'll get to that in a second. So no Joe this week, but we will persevere, guys, and break down UFC Nashville. By the way, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at the DF Sniper. Chris is at Real Chris Olson. And this podcast, as always, is brought to you by RotoWire. Go to rotowire.com/free, 10-day free trial to all their premium content. No credit card required. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast, both on iTunes and on YouTube. If you like what you hear and you're not watching this live on YouTube or watching it after the fact or on iTunes, record these typically Fridays at 8 o'clock. Chat is usually popping, usually some fun banter in there. Nice crew. Everybody who is in there, I see you. Thanks for joining us. Everyone's already complaining about the dogs, and I agree, guys, we will get there. But chat's always fun, so make sure you're here Fridays at 8 o'clock. I think that's enough of the intro. Let's get to some fights. Chris, we have Eric Shelton at 8,700 taking on, Wow, I almost butchered a first name. It is Jordan Espinosa. I won't go into what I called him because I'm pretty sure chat will start calling me racist. Anyway, he's at 7,500. I feel like I should explain that now because it sounded really bad. Yeah, on DraftKings, I just saw Jay Espinosa, and I wanted to call him a different Spanish first name. I mean, he's, you know, because his last name is Spanish, and his first name is Jordan. I don't want to get accused of that kind of stuff. I feel like I explained it a little better there. And now I can tell you that Eric Shelton is minus 135. Jordan Espinosa, the comeback on him is plus 125. Chris, what do you have for this fight?
Before we get into that, guess who just popped into the chat here? It's Sun Tzu himself to make fun of my hair. So good to see you, Joe. And I don't know if you're sticking around or not, but, you know, watch and learn.
Hang on. I don't know how many barbs Sun Tzu can be throwing over there if he's sitting this one out in Las Vegas.
Well, that's the best part.
We get a difficult card and you bail on us, Joe? This is crazy.
That's the best part is now we get to just throw everything we want at him basically uninterrupted. I'm going to block all of his comebacks from getting in the chat. So that's how it works. But as far as this fight goes, yeah, Espinosa is just not really a guy I like very much. He tends to be a guy who I would describe as leaning way too much on his athleticism. If you watch his fights, he tends to just get himself backed up and just look for like a perfect counter shot and just try to use his athleticism to, weave and bob around shots. The problem is this leads to him getting tagged up quite a bit. Now, in his two contender series fights, he has found that perfect shot at a certain point, but he's also eaten shots along the way. And Shelton is just a really well-rounded fighter. Not a ton of finishes by strikes, but he does have some power in his hands. I think he's a pretty slick counterpuncher in his own right for when Espinosa does decide to blitz forward, which he does occasionally do. I think he's a really good wrestler when he commits to it, which we have seen. Espinosa wrestles a little bit himself, but I don't think he's anywhere near as committed to it as Shelton is. And, you know, with a guy in Espinosa who is going to lean on his athleticism, and you got a guy like Shelton who's just as athletic, if not more so, and does other things better, I don't really see where Espinosa's edge lies in this fight, so I have to take Shelton.
I will tell you where Espinosa's potential edge lies in this fight.
Please.
And I'm taking Eric Shelton, I'm picking him to win the fight. But Espinosa is one of the few dogs I am going to be mixing in because Eric Shelton is about as consistent as Joe showing up to these podcasts. You just never know. That was too good to lay off of. But in all seriousness, we've seen Eric Shelton no show before. And to me, these guys are a bit similar in that both have decent stand up, both have decent wrestling. I think in both areas, Shelton is better technically, and I think he should have the edge wherever this fight goes. But this is not a lot, and if he no-shows or Espinosa has made improvements, like it's a close fight, and the line has continued to close, kind of indicating that. I don't trust Shelton, especially, and I'm not going to have a lot of interest in Shelton when in cash games there are clearly better options, I think, above and below. And then same thing in GPPs. Are you going to want Eric Shelton or Curtis Blaydes, Macy Barber, Davison Figueiredo, Marlon Vera, all guys who could score 110 versus Eric Shelton? I mean, what's his ceiling, really? So for that reason, I need dogs to mix in. I've seen Shelton no-show. I'll have some shares of Espinosa. I don't mind it. But Eric Shelton, I do think, is better, and he is the pick to win the fight. So someone in chat said they think that Shelton's going to break the slate tomorrow. I would be shocked if he puts up 100 to 110.
I was going to ask you, because I agree with everything you said. I do think there are more consistent, a lot more consistent point scores in that price range. But we've seen Eric Shelton fights where he really gets committed to those takedowns. And when he does, he can get 5, 6, 7 a fight. So in that sort of situation, do you think Shelton could be a decent, like, contrarian big money play if you're going to go for a couple of GPPs?
If you're playing a bunch of lineups, if you're playing Sun Tzu lineups, if you're playing like 40 to 50, sure. Then throw in a lot of he's a differentiator type of play, but not my favorite. I'm only going to build, because I don't like this card, building 10 to 15. I won't have a lot. All right. Let's go to the next fight. Let's talk about Chris Gutierrez, 8,300, Mr. Chalk himself. He will take on a guy all week I've been calling Ronald McDonald. It is Ryan McDonald, 7,900. You might as well call him Ronald. 8,300, Chris Gutierrez, minus 235. That is chalk, 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 line value, chalk. Ryan McDonald is plus 215. Before I go off in this fight, Chris, break it down.
So we had a little exchange on Twitter because I am I wasn't aware of what the odds are. I'm not much of a line value player. Kind of amazed to see Chris Gutierrez this big of a favorite against anybody. But when you look at tape for McDonald, it kind of makes sense. I mean, he stands up really tall. He gets hit by absolutely everything. In his last fight, that literally all his opponent was doing was throwing up and standing up and winging overhands, and he got caught with one and knocked down. So that's the kind of guy we're dealing with here. So I understand it from that extent. But my problem is, especially knowing how highly owned Gutierrez is likely to be, my problem in GPPs is that he's basically a slow counterfighting kickboxer. And look, McDonald is going to give him a lot of opportunities to counter because he comes in with volume and he doesn't move his head. So fair enough, he's going to have opportunities to counter. But he's also a guy who's going to come right at him. He's going to try to wrestle. We've seen Espinoza's takedown defense be porous in other fights. Gutierrez, rather, his takedown defense be porous in other fights. My concern isn't really that McDonald wins, quite frankly. It's just that if he doesn't get a stoppage, I'm not sure that the volume is there enough to justify him being such a chalk play in GPPs. I think that fading him, and by fading him, I don't mean picking McDonald. I just mean going off of him. I think that could be a decent play because he's likely to be upwards of 40% and above that. So if he can't land that home run shot, which again, he certainly could, McDonald's going to give him opportunities. But if he can't, he's not going to score well on volume. He's not going to be wrestling. So I do think that there could be a bit of an issue with him being such a high chalk play.
Yeah, Chris Gutierrez is going to be chalk. I think cash games, put him in, move on, unless you want to get really funky here. McDonald will look to grapple, but he's terrible, absolutely terrible. Just give me Gutierrez, who had moments against Rayony Barcelos. Barcelos is going to be a force in this division. Look, it's hard for me to get away from Gutierrez when McDonald is this week's Nick Negaramanu, and in terms of in the UFC beating up cans and is on short notice. The difference is, I thought, is Saparbek Safarov. I think Gutierrez is actually a better prospect than Safarov, who's a million years old. So give him, and he's cheaper. So Safarov was a punt last week. Anyway, either way, in this matchup, I like Gutierrez pretty much everywhere. It's going to be hard for me to get away from. He'll be one of my favorite plays on the card. I'm scanning through chat real quick. The way that Sean is sitting, it looks like he's wearing an X-rated Mickey Mouse shirt.
Who's to say he's not wearing an X-rated Mickey Mouse shirt?
I have a two-year-old. Get your head out of the gutters, guys. Or keep him there. It's pretty fun. Anyway, Angela Hill, 8,200, taking on Randa Marcos at 8,000. Hill is minus 145. Marcos is plus 135. Classic striker versus grappler. Chris, striker or grappler?
Yeah, striker for me. If you've been watching this podcast for a little while, you'll know that I'm not really the biggest fan of Randa Marcos. You know, the question that always comes up with a lot of her recent fights, you know, she fought Nina Ansaroff, and the question was, you know, can she get the takedown? That's basically what it hinges on. In this case, Angela Hill's takedown defense is pretty good. I believe it's like 75%. I think she's going to have the footwork to basically – just sort of evade the blitzes into the pocket that Marcos tries to do to close down range and get her takedowns. And from there, I think that Hill's just going to try to pick her apart, and I think he's going to be successful. I think we've seen Marcos really have trouble with leg kicks, particularly in our last two fights. I just think that Hill is the better in-and-out fighter. She's a mover. She's gonna put a ton of volume on basically whoever she fights, win or lose, which makes her a pretty nice floor play regardless. But I think she gets the win here. I think it's a good strategy, and I'm gonna have myself some Angela Hill.
So what's scary is that usually striker versus grappler, I'm all about the grappler. In this matchup, I agree with Chris. Sorry, guys. Wow. No fireworks here. We'll probably get there later. I like Hill in this one. I think even for as strikers go on DraftKings, incredibly high volume, Marcos just gets hit all the damn time. She blocks punches with her face impressively. She just really – her takedowns are singles. Hill has good movement. I think Hill will be stronger the later this fight goes. Hill can be taken down, but I think she'll get back up. She's way better on the feet. I like her as a floor play as well, and I actually have – I'm going to mix in a little bit of Angela Hill in GPPs because of her high volume. I think she can get a late finish. She's more athletic, more active. Is usually a spot where I tend to favor the grappler, but the more tape I watched and Marcos gets hit a lot, is in these close fights, I like Angela Hill here. I'm going to pick her, and I think she's the better play. I know our boy Otto in chat disagrees with me. I'm sure he's devastated, but we'll let him recover as we talk about Alexis Davis at 8,600 taking on Jennifer Maya at 7,600. Alexis Davis is... You better still be the favorite. I saw this line dancing around a little bit. Minus 130. So we're coming down. There is odd value on Jennifer Maya at plus 120. Chris, break it down.
Yeah. Maya actually showed me some surprisingly good things in her debut against Liz Carmouche. I expected her from the tape I'd seen previously to just sort of be like a counter striker who's open to be hit, but It really wasn't as much of that. She came forward pretty well, I thought. She was using a nice high guard, I thought. She was evading strikes decently well. And I think that Alexis Davis is, I mean, you got to like her because, she comes forward, but her striking is really pretty sloppy. And she's a jiu-jitsu black belt, but she doesn't have a reliable way of getting the fight to the ground. So I think that Maya can find her counters here. The issue is that I don't know that she'll be able to deal with the pressure that Alexis Davis puts on her for the whole fight. But the sort of trade-off to that is that she hits, I would say she probably hits harder than somebody like a Caitlin Jukagian does. So could she hit her hard enough to change the course of the fight? I'm not so sure, but I do think she's going to find counters, in spots, and I also think that Alexis Davis can't be counted on to wrestle. So I think I'm going to – generally I would pick the volume striker in this spot, but I think I'm going to go with Maya just because she's pretty much going to get the fight she wants, so let's see what she can do with it. But I really wouldn't be shocked if Alexis Davis just puts enough volume on her to win a decision.
I'm responding to somebody in chat real quick. Give me one second.
Okay. Make it a good one. Let me see.
No. It's we're talking about the last fight. And somebody said, Dave said we should skip this fight. I really want to skip Davis, Maya. I think Maya's actually going to be a little bit popular here. I wish I could trust Alexis Davis to grapple. I'm still going to pick Alexis Davis. I thought your striking looked better than I thought it would against Caitlin Chukagian. Maya's not a big power striker, less volume, so I like the pressure and volume of Davis. Plus, there's some grappling upside. However, so she's my pick to win the fight. I'm not interested in much of this fight, period. I'll have some Alexis Davis because I think she'll be under-owned and she could grapple. But it's similar to what we talked about in the opening fight. I mean, why am I going to pay up for a ton of Alexis Davis when I have Vera, Figueiredo, Blades, Barber, like... right in the same price range for a few hundred. Now I get Blades and Barber. She's $300-$400 cheaper than them, so I get it. Give me Alexis Davis as the pick. I don't want much of this fight anywhere on DraftKings. Like,
yeah,
my 15 lineups, I might one or two, maybe.
I think we agree there. I don't know about Maya being a little popular. That would be interesting, but I guess we'll see.
Maybe in cash games. I think she'll be a viable pawn at plus 120 in a fight, in a female fight no one expects to finish.
Yeah.
I guess. All right, next fight. Marlon Vera, 8,400, taking on Frankie Saenz at 7,800. Vera's the favorite, minus 160. The comeback on Saenz is plus 150. You going with Vera or Saenz?
Yeah, I think this is a really good spot for Frankie Saenz. My analysis of Marlon Vera fights are usually always the same. It's that even if he's the better fighter, I can't trust him to show up and put a consistent offensive game together. And to that end, in both of his last two fights, he won both, but he lost the first round convincingly in both. And then he had to, step on the gas and really pull it out. In the first round, in the Guido Canetti fight specifically, Canetti just poured volume and pressure on him and really had him hurt a couple times in that first round. So I can't trust Marlon Vera to put a consistent offensive game together. I think Frankie Saenz does a lot of the same stuff, only smarter. I think he's going to fight in bursts. I think he throws well in combination. Specifically, he's got really good body-head combinations. And he can throw off the timing with a little bit of wrestling. And we've seen Vera susceptible to wrestling. I mean, Vera's got good kicks. When he decides to pressure forward, he can sort of be a problem with the long range kicking game. But I just can't trust him to do it. And I've seen Frankie Saenz put together a consistent game plan in fights before, so I got to go with Saenz.
Okay, so this is where things are going to get interesting. I think it's a close fight. I think that, and I hear what you're saying, and Otto in chat says it's just seems like the kind of fight Chito loses. I agree, except whoever you are picking to win this fight, this is one where I'm going to pull out the we're talking about DraftKings card. Who's the better DraftKings play? Who's more likely to put up 100 points in their win? The answer is Marlon Vera.
You do? I don't think so.
In a Vera win? All right, well, let's just look. Marlon Vera, in his wins, 105, 111, 93, 89, one stinker in here, 70, and 84. So a couple hundreds, he's popped there before. Frankie Saenz, 99 against Henry Briones, 59 against Mirab Divalishvili, 75, 75, and a 95. He's got one more 95 in there.
Can I just say, in a lot of those fights, he's fighting the better fighter than Vera is?
You're going to tell me in his wins?
Yeah.
Tickman, Kakai?
Well, that one, but that was a 95. I'm saying in the lower
Kakai, score. Kakai is 75.
All right, so take that one out. But I'm saying Marlon Vera, I mean, Canetti and Luigi Borin are his two over 100s, so. Right.
But in the way they fight, this fight is all going to be about pace. I think if it is a technical fight where Saenz can execute a game plan, stay at range, pick his shots, circle off the Vera pressure, he wins. I think his path to victory is a 60-70 point win. That's the most likely to me.
But if Vera pressures, you have to rely on him pressuring, which you can't rely on.
But if he doesn't this is what I'm saying, Chris. I think if he doesn't pressure, then Saenz is going to win the fight, but it won't be a high scoring win. I think if Vera does pressure and is obviously successful, he's more likely to score 100 points with knockdowns. Also, he's live to if Saenz tries to grapple. We've seen him hit submissions before. Maybe he's more likely to have a GPP winning score. I think this is a GPP fight. I don't mind targeting both sides because. No, I take it back. I don't want much Frankie Saenz. I think I wanted to say I can target both sides because it's close, and I do think it's a close fight. I just their path to victory. Saenz is a lower scores in his wins than Vera has in his wins. I think Vera's more likely to pop 100 points in one of his wins than Saenz is in his, and it's a GPP fight. I'm not interested in this in cash games, so for that reason, I think Vera's the better cash game play. And in the end, I like Vera's pressure. I like the pressure fighter. So I'm picking him to win a very close fight. Go ahead. What do you got?
No, I was just going to – I mean, I guess we're just not going to agree on the fact that, I mean, he's probably not going to pressure, but that's okay. If you think that he is, that's fine.
I think it's the way he wins.
Yeah, it might be, but I think that, it's few and far between. But Saenz is just – and he's going to mix in the takedowns, and he's going to – I mean, at least I think Saenz is the better cash play. You wouldn't agree with that either?
Yeah, I'm going to – yeah, but why?
Okay. Fair.
Well, I mean, you talk. We're gonna get there, but I'm looking at Anthony Pettis and cash. So why do I need this?
All right. Fair enough.
All right. Bobby Moffitt, 8,800, taking on Bryce Mitchell at 7,400. Of course, the odds went away on me. It's a bad job by me. Usually, one of you two would have been yapping and could have pulled up my next fight. Instead, I got a filibuster like that before I can tell you that Bobby Moffitt's a -145 favorite. The comeback on Bryce Mitchell is +135. Do you have Bobby Moffitt or old nutsack Bryce Mitchell?
I think I have the guy who drills into his own nutsack, which is the only time I've ever said that sentence. But
is it though?
Yeah, good call. Good call. But yeah, I like Mitchell. I like these guys. It's similar to similar to last week with who was the debut fighter against Nad Nirmani?
Mike Grundy.
Similar to a guy like that, where I like these guys who have really streamlined games, and I think Bryce Mitchell falls in that category where his striking, it's okay. He has an overhand. He can jab a little bit, but he's really just trying to get to that takedown. And I think the benefit of him over a guy like Grundy is I think his jiu-jitsu is probably a little better. He's pretty slick. He's a good back taker. So I like all of those aspects of his game. I think that he can win here just by out scrambling. And a guy like Moffitt, I just don't trust him to be active enough. That was my problem with him going into that Chaz Kelly fight that ended under suspicious circumstances. Here nor there, I think Mitchell is just gonna be able to pour on the pressure and basically control this fight everywhere it goes. So I'm taking a nice long look at Mitchell here.
Yeah, Otto just said something in chat. I've mentioned Otto a few times, but somebody else on Twitter said it too. My friend Loudmouth MMA, that if they were Bobby Moffitt, the first thing they would do is accidentally kick Bryce Mitchell in the cup. Oh my God, I don't want to see blood on boxer on shorts. Please don't let that happen. No thanks. It's interesting that both these guys are grapplers. I think Mitchell has the edge in the feet, but I think they're both going to look to grapple and scramble. And I think they're probably even wrestlers. And I think that Bobby Moffitt is a more experienced BJJ guy. I like his Brazilian jiu-jitsu more.
I think we disagree on that one.
Yeah, I think Moffitt is the better grappler. I can understand your concern about the activity. I think Mitchell's probably the more well-rounded fighter, but I think Mitchell is also young and inexperienced. I think Moffitt's a little more seasoned and a little better grappler. I tend to lean towards him, and I think he makes for a really interesting pivot off of the very chalky Curtis Blaydes and Macy Barber. I don't mind Bryce Mitchell. I do think it's a close fight. It should be a grappling-based fight, so I'm okay with both sides. But I lean toward Bobby Moffitt for the reasons I mentioned. And I think I said, I think I want to go to chat. Joe did type it. Moffitt is one of my favorite plays in the slate, and I'm only playing one lineup. Joe's only playing one lineup.
Wow.
God.
What kind of universe are we living in?
I'm terrified there's going to be overlay. Let's not let that happen, guys.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Macy Barber, 8,900, taking on J.J. Aldrich at 7,300. Barber's -250. Aldrich is +230. Do you have the new kid on the block or the fighter I just can't get right? And that's J.J. Aldrich.
I think that Barber probably wins this fight, but I think it's an appropriate fight for her. Like, I think it's a good test for her. Aldrich is going to stay in her face. She's going to try to outwork her, try to box her in close range. My problem with J.J. Aldrich, there's a couple of things. The first one is that she wasn't really doing that well in kicking range against Pollyanna Viana when it was there. The second thing is we've seen her in fights hang out in the clinch a little too much, and that includes the Viana fight. And to her credit, she did pretty well there in the Viana fight, but she didn't have to deal with elbows and tie clinch and all the other fun stuff that Macy Barber is going to make you have to deal with. So I think that just the way she fights presents some problems. I would like it better if she had like a consistent kicking game with leg kicks, which she really doesn't. I think Barber wins here. I think I could see a sub. A knockout is a little bit tougher to see. But I do think she wins this fight, and I do think she does have a chance to pay off. But if she's just not used to somebody coming at her and putting pressure on her, then yeah, she might be able to drop a decision. But ultimately, I favor Barber here.
Yeah, I'm with Barber. I'm on the hype train for this one. I think she's stronger. I think she's faster. I think she's more athletic. Vicious ground and pound. Aldrich has come a long way. She's made improvements. Good stand up. But I think Barber's going to be too much in the clinch. And this fight hits the ground, it should be a problem. I think it'll be a little tougher than Barber's last fight. I'm not sold in a finish, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. I just like, you know, these pressure fighters are good for DraftKings. She's pressure, high volume, going to want to get the fight to the ground. I do agree it's the appropriate progression in her career. I like Macy Barber a lot in this fight. Sign me up at 8,900. All right, moving on. I'll check chat in a second. I see chat going nuts over there. Luis Pena. Oh, we had this fight to talk about. This will be fun. Luis Pena, 9,200, taking on Steven Peterson at 7,000. Actually, I haven't looked to see what the line's been doing today on this fight. Not moving as much as I thought it was going to. Pena's minus 225. Peterson plus 205. Pena tried to make weight, dropping. He's 6'3". He tried to make featherweight. Missed. Dude at one point said he can make bantamweight. 5-1 as a pro. A lot of hype on him because he's violent Bob Ross. Good shtick, but man, it's a lot of pressure, and he hasn't really beaten anybody great. And he's got Steven Peterson here who you know what? I'll give my breakdown on it in a minute. Pena or Peterson, this fight is probably going to make or break the slate.
Yeah, Pena to me is a really interesting, a slate breaker, expensive play because I don't think many people are going to be on him. He had a bad performance in the last fight. Now he doesn't make weight, looks bad on the scale. I think that's really going to deplete his ownership, and it's really hard for me not to take like a rangy kicking tall fighter when we saw his opponent take so many kicks. Landed hard kicks to the head in his fight against Matt Bissett. I just think that Peterson he struggles with his range, and I think that's going to be a problem in this fight. Even in the Bissett fight where they were more comparable, he was falling short a lot. I think that Violent Bob Ross is going to be able to control that range. I think one of those head kicks is going to score, and I think he can knock him out that way. I just seeing him eat so many head kicks, I just can't in good conscience pick Peterson. He's a wrestler. He seems to be a pretty slick, floaty grappler, but the length of Bob Ross could make problems for that as well. I like Bob Ross here, and I don't think a lot of people are going to be on him. So I'm for the reemergent KO.
So Peterson is definitely going to be chalky. Everyone's seen Pena miss weight. We've seen him look horrendous on the scales. He looked bad today. And Peterson is the type of guy he's tough. He is, his best asset is his toughness, which I have a problem with typically. I hate fighters like that. That should not be your best quality as an MMA fighter. It's a good quality. Look at Ben Askren. Apparently he's tough as shit. I mean, we just learned that the hard way, but it's not his best quality. Peterson is not that good of a fighter, but
I'm so waiting for your
for three rounds. Yeah, Peterson's going to be chalky. For three rounds, you think Pena's going to be able to keep that up, highly depleted against the guy who's just going to keep coming forward? Man, this is a terror, and he's 5-1 in the UFC, 5-1 as a pro.
You say, where have I been?
No, 5-1 as a pro.
Yeah.
Man, this is just a bad matchup. And this is my but I do think before I realized all the weight issues and some of the intangibles and really just the IQ that Pena's displayed, because he put out a statement today, was like, I could make the weight. There were things out of my, just this vague. There were things out of my control I should have focused on and I didn't. And it was weird. I don't think he's in a good frame of mind. And Peterson, I think the toughness is going to come into play here. I think Peterson's also going to be very, very chalky. You got Otto yelling about him in chat over there. I think Pena before like the start of the week was going to be my GPP pivot off of Curtis Blaydes. It's hard for me to get on board with Pena and invest money in a guy who looks terrible for the weight, has not excelled against higher competition. And I'm not saying Peterson is great competition, but he's probably better than anyone that Pena's beat in his career. I mean, what's Pena's best win? Richie Smullen?
Ugh.
So I think Peterson's the better DraftKings play for sure. I'm still rooting for Pena, but sign me up for Peterson.
I got to get back in here a little bit. The idea that he missed weight and he was depleted, yeah, but how many times have we seen fighters come back from the dead? You know, the line moves because everybody sees it, and then that fighter comes in and does what everybody thought they were going to do anyway.
This line moved before. This line hasn't actually moved since the way it is.
I understand. It's the point. The point is that everybody sees. In this instance, maybe it didn't affect the line as much, but like everybody sees, oh, we got to get off him because you know he looked bad, and then they rehydrate and they're fine. So,
well, you got what do you say about a 5-1 guy taking on a guy who's a bulldog? Like that's not a good matchup.
Well, I mean, he might be a bulldog, but again, like you even said it yourself. I mean, I have a real problem. Like I understand the Gutierrez chalk way more than I understand this one, just because
we need underdogs. That's why we need underdog bad.
I get that part, but I'm just saying, like, it's weird. It's weird for me for everybody to be on somebody and not be able to tell me like something he does really well. So that part's just kind of weird for me. And he doesn't move his head. We've seen how much he gets hit. It's just a weird chalk spot for me. Very weird chalk spot.
All right, let's move on to Davison Figueiredo, 8,500, taking on Jussie Formiga at 7,700. Davison is the favorite, -145. Formiga is the dog at +135. Break down this flyweight fight. Strawberry Jello? What flavor of Jello?
Joe just said something in chat that confused me.
The world wants to know what flavor of Jello you're gonna have.
I'm not sure what that means. I'm not in the hospital, Joe. I'm fine. But if anybody can explain that to me, please do so while we move on to the next fight here. I like Formiga a ton here. If we're talking about dogs, I think. Here we go. I think he's a really underrated wrestler. I think he cuts the corners on his double legs really well. We saw that in the Sergio Pettis fight.
What? That's not what kind of grappler he is. He's not a wrestler.
He does. He's done it.
He did it once. He looks for trips, and I don't think he doesn't have typical wrestling.
Well, he can do it. Leave it there.
Okay.
I think he's a really fluid striker. He moves in and out a lot. I think he's a good counter puncher. And Davison Figueiredo, I mean, he's a lot in that, you know, Yuri Alcantara school of, in fact, I think they train together, of like the Muay Thai striker who just he plods forward, pressures you, and looks for big single shots. That's why, like you don't really think of him as a wrestler when you think of him, but when you look at his fights, he tends to wrestle a lot just because that's basically where his advantage lies a lot of times, just because he's bigger and stronger than everybody else. But I don't think that he's going to be able to do that against to get Formiga to the ground, even if he is. I think Formiga is probably going to have better jiu-jitsu. We know how good of a back taker Formiga is. I just think he's the way more put together fighter. I think that we've basically already seen Formiga lose to a wrestler, although they didn't call it that. Now, granted, Jared Brooks is probably a better wrestler than Formiga. I think Formiga is a better wrestler than you think he is. So we have that to debate. But I just think he's the way better put together fighter. And unless Formiga catches him, I think he's going to take the win here.
So I'm a little – this is, to me, a little similar to Vera and Sainz. I think who is more likely to break the slate? Davison Figueiredo. I also think Formiga – I think Figueiredo is striking and athleticism is way better than Jussie Formiga's. and that could be a hot take to say, Formiga obviously has the advantage on the ground. Obviously, Formiga has the advantage on the ground. He is human backpack. I think if it gets down, I just don't think – it's a different type of grappling. It's not the Jared Brooks blast doubles. I saw a lot of trips and takedowns, and that's how Formiga gets on top. I think Figueiredo is a little too athletic. It's not out of the realm of possibility at all. This fight hits the ground, and that's Formiga's world. This is a close fight. I'm not saying I have a super strong lean on it. What I do have a stronger lean on is that Davison is more likely to put up 100 points. I love his athleticism, his explosiveness, high volume pressure. Just God stay on the feet. It is a big step up for him. Formiga has fought better competition, only loses to the best, true gatekeeper. A high-level gatekeeper, not like a top 15 one. Like, you beat Formiga, you're probably top 5. We'll see if Davison is. I think he is. Give me Davison to get this one done and potentially put up a pretty big score here. All right, we have John McDessie, 9,100, taking on Jesus Pinedo at 7,100. McDessie is minus 265, Pinedo plus 245. Chris, who do you have?
Yeah, I really like this matchup for McDessie quite a bit here. I think that Pinedo – look, I picked Pinedo in that fight against Devin Powell because I would never pick anybody against Devin Powell. And that fight was way closer than I thought it was going to be just by virtue of the fact that – excuse me, he was able to pressure and use his kicking game to sort of frustrate Pinedo and keep him on the back foot. The only reason basically that Powell loses that fight is because Powell doesn't have any kind of consistent offense.
You mean he sucks? Like when,
In a couple words, he sucks. But he just doesn't have any consistent offense. So whenever he would get the upper hand, like, he would have no idea how to keep it. And then in the next 30 seconds, you'd see him flopped on his back. So, I mean, that's not going to happen with a guy like McDessie, who is able to pressure, who is a very educated striker. He's got a great counter-striking game. He can lead as well. Throws in combination. He can work behind a good jab. Pinedo was in trouble way more often than you should ever be in trouble in a fight against Devin Powell. And I just don't really like a lot about what I see in his game. And McDessie's still game, man. He went to war with Ross Pearson and came at it on the good side of it. So he's a tough guy. He's game. I think he's the way better basically everything here, and I like him to get it done.
Yeah, I'm also on McDessie here. This is my GPP pivot that instead of having a lot of Pena, I'll probably have a fair share of McDessie. Pinedo is bad. Powell is bad. And Pinedo struggled. Pinedo is probably going to try and grapple here, I think. Who knows? I think he's going to try and close the distance. And as he closes the distance, because he's going to be the longer guy, as he comes in, McDessie's just going to piece him up. I think McDessie is just too good, too technical. You do have to worry about the scoring because there's no grappling here for McDessie. He needs the knockout to score. I think he very well could get it. I think he's pretty safe. I think he's got a little bit of upside. Give me John McDessie. Co-main event time. Curtis Blaydes, 9,000, taking on Justin Big Pretty Willis at 7,200. I have a pretty strong take on this fight. I mean, they're going to look like a genius or an idiot, but we'll talk about it in a second. Curtis Blaydes is minus 245. Willis is plus 225. Chris, go for it.
Yeah, I am always a little worried about Curtis Blaydes. And the reason is because he likes to strike way more than he should, and his striking is terrible. He very often misses his range and gets countered. That happened in both the Hunt fights and the Ngannou fights. One he survived, the other one he didn't. And
early, you know, stoppage, so, in my opinion, but I know not is one of those early stoppage, but not a terrible stoppage.
Sean would have liked to see him hit the ground three more times before the fight got stopped.
He was popping back up. What do you want?
I want, when some guy's clearly in trouble, I want the fight to get stopped. That's what I want. But anyway, all right.
Guys in chat, do you think Blaydes versus Ngannou? All I'm saying is, early, not terrible, not one that I'm gonna, you know, kick and scream about. I just think it was a little early.
Are you on my
side or not?
I think he got saved, but we'll see what the chat has to say. I think that Blaydes has to get his wrestling going early. And even if he does, I mean, it's not 100% clear to me that he can just dominate Willis with his wrestling. I mean, maybe he can, but Willis is a wrestler in his own right and a pretty big boy in his own right. Now, what can happen is Curtis Blaydes can gas him out over the course of the fight. That certainly can happen. We've seen Willis get tired before. We've seen Blaydes can go for days. He had, I don't know, 100,000 mat returns in that fight against Mark Hunt, and looked relatively fresh in the third, as fresh as you can expect a guy to look who had just been that action, who's not dead tired. And so with that angle, getting him tired, I think, can happen. I don't think he's automatically just going to run over him with his wrestling. He could, but I don't know for a fact that he will. I think Willis could be a tricky kind of pivot here. I wouldn't advocate a ton of him, but he's the way better striker. He works behind a really good jab, really strong thudding jab, which is basically how he won that Mark Hunt fight. He can throw in combination. His hands are really quick, especially for a big guy. And look, we know that Blaydes' chin is good, but if we can't get the takedown and Blaydes could just Willis can just stick him behind that jab and circle out, it could be a pretty long night for him. So I'm going to take Curtis Blaydes. I think a lot of people think Willis is absolutely dead here. I do not.
You're on the wrong side of MMA Twitter anyway, because Justin Willis, people are betting on him.
Oh, really?
Sure. In fact, they're heavyweights, and we've seen Curtis Blaydes rock before. Sure. But we haven't seen him defend a takedown. You're going to assume he can defend a takedown because he trains at AKA. It doesn't work that way. It absolutely does not work that way. Otto says Willis is live. Yeah, he's live in far as that he's a heavyweight, and Blaydes needs to not mess around. But while he's live, Blaydes also has probably among the highest ceilings on the slate. He should want no part of the stand-up. Just take him down, beat the shit out of him, get a finish. It should be that easy for Curtis Blaydes. He's the way better fighter. I don't think Justin Willis is any good. He's going to be short, which is my one concern with Blaydes getting a takedown, but I think he's a good enough wrestler to overcome that and being able to get under the hips of Justin Willis. Yeah, Willis has got a puncher's chance. I hate betting on guys who have a puncher's chance. Give me Curtis Blaydes, and the more I read on Twitter, the more I think I'm going to be overexposed to Curtis Blaydes, which is just bizarre.
I've been seeing that term with him a lot, puncher's chance. I think puncher's chance is more like he's got to land a big shot to win the fight. I don't think that's the case. I think he's going to win the fight as long as it's standing. So that's not like he doesn't have to just land a big shot, but he does have to keep it standing. And the fact I agree with you. I don't know if Blaydes could dominate him in the wrestling. Maybe he can. And we're going to know really quickly if he can or not. But if he can't, I think it could be a problem. I think that's more of an unknown in this fight than a lot of people are giving it credit for.
Yeah, it's just weird. I can't get behind a ton of Justin Willis. And we have to channel Joe since he's not here. Chase Sherman lasted all three rounds against Justin Willis. Chase better than compound interest. Sherman.
That's right.
You know, I hope Chase Sherman shows up at Joe's doorstep one day. just stares at him. All right, here we go. Main event time. It is Stephen Thompson, 9,300, taking on Anthony Showtime Pettis at 6,900, a fight that I don't think I've seen anybody on Twitter or anywhere explain to me why in the hell this fight is happening. So, Chris, as you break it down, if you could tell me why we're having this fight, that would be super.
I didn't know why, but I've heard a decent explanation, which is that they wanted to fight each other, and that these two guys weren't really doing anything, so the UFC said, why not? And that's pretty much why we're here. I'm willing to go with that explanation because nothing else makes sense, really. But as far as the fight goes, it's interesting to me because – I'm really excited that someone is going to make Stephen Thompson actually fight. he's fought a lot of low volume strikers in the past. Darren Till, even a guy like Jorge Masvidal, of course Tyron Woodley. So we've seen a lot of his like evasiveness and footwork and sort of counter striking, and we're still going to get some of that here. And I think that's going to be a major factor for Thompson, is going to be his footwork and his ability to circle up, because I do think Pettis is going to pressure him and try to use his kicking game. Ultimately, I think that we sort of have to worry about Pettis's durability here. I mean, you can call them fluky or whatever, but the last two fights, he had the rib injury, he had to stop, he had broke the hand, he had to stop. So that, at a certain point, I think that does become a concern. I like the fact that Pettis might be able to just out-volume him here. We've seen Wonderboy hurt before. We've also seen Anthony Pettis hurt before, of course. He can also lean on the wrestling, even though he said he doesn't want to do that anymore. Obviously, on the ground, he'd have a gigantic advantage. I know most people are like slam dunk Stephen Thompson here. I don't think that that's right. I think that the pressure and the volume of a guy like Pettis is going to be a little tricky. And I think that Thompson, if he wins, is probably going to be a decision. And I think that Pettis has a lot of advantages. So it's a close fight. I think I'm going to take Pettis for a little bit of I guess it's a substantial update.
It'd be a pretty big upset
here, yeah. But what I meant to say was I'm going to slightly take Pettis for the upset. I don't think it's a runaway by any means, but I think I'm leaning Pettis.
Yeah, so we have a guy who has fought at featherweight in his career, fighting at welterweight. Oh, man, that's sketchy part number one.
Yeah, but he looked pretty good. He looked pretty good today. Yeah.
Every time somebody brings the fight to Stephen Thompson, he knocks them out. Mm. That's red flag number two. That's why people have play this game with Stephen Thompson, because if you don't, you get knocked out. I wish Pettis would rely on his grappling. Either way, I think Pettis, outside of him, you're right, rib injury, hand injury. He had moments in the Tony Ferguson fight.
Sure. Hurt him bad.
Right. He's shown durability before outside of those fluky things, but in terms of getting knocked out, he's shown durability. I don't see Thompson finishing him quickly. Now, a lot of the guys Thompson did finish, I mentioned that, they brought the fight to him. They're also, lower level guys. Johnny Hendricks, that was the ghost of Johnny Hendricks. Jake Ellenberger is a really good knockout. Patrick Cote lasted three rounds.
Sure, and can I say too, those guys aren't nearly as dynamic as strikers as Anthony Pettis.
Right, it's gonna be some flashy stuff. Now, it's interesting to see how this is gonna play out. I don't see a quick finish for Wonderboy. It's possible. I'm not seeing it. Dog light slate. Anthony Pettis, 6,900. If I can get even five rounds is what I want. Obviously, but four rounds of striking out of him. If anybody's gonna grapple, it'll be him. I don't mind taking a shot in cash games, and I think most people are going to be on Stephen Thompson. I don't mind some shares of Pettis in GPPs. I think he's live in this fight. Former UFC champion. Yes, I know he's at lightweight. Yes, I know he's undersized. I just think he's live in this one. So I can't agree with Chris all the way, because I do think in the end that Thompson will be able to control the range better and win a decision. I think Thompson is my pick, but I'm more interested in Pettis for DraftKings. I got to check real quick before we get over here. Is chat exploding? No, we got somebody spamming us. I wouldn't stack this for cash games. I would never stack a Stephen Thompson fight. I just can't do it. So, yeah. That's what we got for the main event breakdown and the breakdown for all these fights. Let's get to hot takes. Only two hot takes. Zelda wants to do two apiece. That's just not going to happen. But let's both agree to try and do an extra spicy hot take. So
let's take two from the chat this time. If you guys pour them all in and let Sean read them out. Come on, guys.
So let's get some hot takes from chat. I'm going to scroll through real quick. You got one queued up for us?
I have a question about my hot take. Can it be a favorite, but still something nobody expects to happen? So can I like if I say that? So if I say Luis Peña is going to knock out Peterson, is that a hot take?
Yeah, I'll give that one to you.
All right, sweet, I'll take it.
I will give you Luis Peña by KO. I am going to say, God, I'm trying to come up with a real good one here. I can't let our adoring public down. Can I say Bryce Mitchell is going to bleed from the crotch?
Oh God, that's your gore take now. Oh,
God, that would be horrendous.
You want me to read some hot takes out while you're thinking of it?
Yep, you go ahead and read two for me.
All right, we got Zelda in chat. We got two women by finish. Any two women? Nolan Dahl says Randall Marcos is the top scorer. Wow, that's a really hot one.
That would be really a hot take.
Dave Bienna says McDessie by KO. He also says Peterson by KO in round three. So getting very specific there. He also says Hill by KO. So we got some interesting ones in chat. You ready? You ready at all there, Sean?
Give me Marlon Vera by submission.
Do you want to call out a submission? You want to really call your shot here?
Really call my shot here? Armbar.
All right. Well, there you have it.
I almost said triangle, so he's going to get a triangle.
I know that's what you were thinking, too. That was a weird point.
So we'll go armbar. All right, guys, that's what we got. Make sure you go to rotowire.com/free, 10-day free trial to get all their premium content, no credit card required. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube and iTunes, RotoWire MMA. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at the DF Sniper. Chris is at Real Chris Olsen. Good luck in your UFC Nashville contest. Maybe Sun Tzu will decide to grace us with his presence, but you know what, Chris? I think we held it down pretty well. Good luck. We'll see you next week.
All right. Yeah, we did pretty well. Thanks for watching, everybody. Joe, Sun Tzu, I'm sure Megan will unblock you.
She will.
All you have to do is
she
campaign will. Really hard. I'm sure it's going to happen. Hashtag free Sun Tzu for Megan Anderson. But besides that, yeah, everybody enjoy. And thanks for hanging out. And good luck in the contest.
Later, guys.